Good evening. I'd like to welcome you to the Stanislaus County Board of Supervisor meeting for September 21, 2010. We're going to rise shortly and pledge allegiance to the flag, and then I'd like to ask all of you to join us in a moment of silence for the tragic and unexpected passing of Deputy District Attorney Sean Barlow. So please join us in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We'll start tonight's meeting as we do each meeting with an opportunity at public comment to items that are not on the regular agenda. And tonight we have several requests to do that, so I'm going to call the name of the person that has requested to speak and the person that will follow that person. As we've done it several times now, so we're probably familiar with how to do it. And I'm going to ask you to not be repetitive and say the same thing that other people have said. Try to introduce some new testimony for us. And I'm going to ask also that we restrict our comments to 5 minutes. So we'll start this evening with Mary Whetstone.
Good evening.
Hello.
I'm Mary Whetstone. I was former president of ASA, Animal Services Auxiliary, and I'm here to address the naming of the new county shelter. The new county shelter should be named for Tom Mayfield. His dedication to this project made it a reality. He visited the old shelter quite often and saw firsthand the horrible conditions where impounded animals were housed. One major flaw that he saw was the ventilation system that carried disease throughout the whole shelter, even in the hospital where sick and injured animals were housed, and where spaying and neutering was done before they got the neuter scooter. Tom saw all this and more. He worked very hard to change this, and he succeeded by getting a new shelter built. Although the new shelter project was made possible by the vote of the entire board, it was Tom who worked relentlessly for this. He laid the groundwork for all this project. The new project should be named for Tom Mayfield, not only because of his dedication to make the shelter a reality, but also because, to me, his name equates to hard work and humaneness for the animals. What a wonderful legacy for the shelter staff and volunteers to maintain this and to be known for it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. And as part of the consent calendar, we will be taking care of that. So thank you for your comments.
Okay.
Next, we'd like to hear from Carl Camp, followed by Tracy Holcomb.
Good evening. My name's Carl Camp. I'm from the Modesto Tea Party Patriots. We're part of a larger group, the North Valley Tea Party Patriots. And I believe our membership right now is about 1,500 people that are active in the group. We are growing rapidly. Our group has only started in February, but we're at about 600 people just in the Modesto area. I came today to let you know that we are here, and we are very concerned about our country, our state, our cities, and our county. One of the things that we wanted to do is leave each of you a letter introducing ourselves to you, and leave you a copy of the pocket constitution. It is a small sized edition of the U.S. Constitution that you can keep with you at all times and refer to. This is the foundation of our country, and we hope that you'll pay close attention to it. The other item that we have in these pamphlets is an article by a Sheriff Mack from Nye County, Nevada, that talked about the strength and the authority of a sheriff and of county supervisors being elected officers, that the president, that Washington, that Sacramento are not the strongest authority in the country. You are. You are the strongest authority in the country being elected officials. And I hope you take that seriously. I'd like to pass these to the clerk.
Thank you.
And we're going to be watching each of the board meetings. We'll have a representative here observing if we don't record it on camera off the website. And basically, we're looking for you're following the three core principles that we are following. I've included that in the letter, so I won't repeat that now. But for example, I was just looking through the agenda tonight, and I didn't come to speak on that. But I believe it's item six, talking about opening up approval of the Director of Department of Environmental Resources to enter into an agreement. And looking at that article, it talks about the reasons to do this. And I just at the corner of my eye caught two things, that by reducing greenhouse gas emissions, you're going to increase housing affordability. I don't know about you, but my house is kind of affordable right now. I'm really upside down, and I don't think anybody else can say that they aren't. So I don't know how anything is going to increase house affordability right now that we want. The other thing is it says it's going to strengthen the economy. If local businesses continue to be excessively regulated, it's going to stifle economy. And I wanted to let you know that we are watching. We are concerned citizens. We are business owners. We are employees that have lost jobs. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Tracy Holcomb, and following Tracy will be April Primo.
Well, excuse me, this is the first time I've ever done this, and I didn't plan on doing it today. I actually came to see my congressman, which almost takes the act of God to find out who he is, believe me. I'm legally blind, and through the directory assistance, I've called everybody. Did you know that your chief of police does not know who the damn mayor is? That's a fact. Or they didn't want to tell me. One of the two. Okay, I also had another woman that worked for the police department. She couldn't tell me who the district attorney is. She says that's not the department I work for. If you're going to work under these officials, I think you ought to know who your boss is. You know, I think it's a sad shame. I'll just go with that with Modesto for right now. But this is the first time in my life that I never stood up for the Pledge of Allegiance. And the reason for that is because this is not the country that the Constitution was built on. I wasn't interested in too many things. I have an eighth grade education, but I know my rights, and I know the Constitution, and I know the forefathers. And what you guys do is injustice. Okay? I've called police officers. I told a guy, a sheriff, that there is a man outside my house that I can guarantee you has 2 ounces of heroin in his pocket. There is a man next door to me that is selling to high school kids Oxycontins, marijuana, downers, uppers, everything you can think of he's selling. You know what they told me? Well, we went out there, but, you know, he has a municipal license to grow marijuana, so there's nothing we can do. So I thought, well, okay, I live in Houston. You know, it's the sheriff's department, little town. Let's call Modesto. They've always been good to me. That was when Jim Brazelton was in office. They've always been on my side. Let's call Modesto. Gene Ballantyne? I've called him 7 times. I've left him 7 messages. I don't know if he's the chief. What?
Ma'am.
I speak pretty loud. I don't need a microphone. Oh, well, excuse me, too. I'm not dressed for this, but, hey, I wasn't planning on doing this. I've left 7 messages on Gene Ballantyne's message machine. I've also talked to his associates saying, look, man, I've reported to these drug dealers. two or three times to the Sheriff's Department, not only Houston but Modesto. I've called the narcotic squad, and now I'm telling you, Gene, I know you don't like my family, and he doesn't. But you know what? Somebody's going to overdose before you people do something. We're talking about 16-year-old kids that's going to Houston High School. I've called the Dean of Boys. He can't do it on his own. He's tried. He says he's been to the sheriff's office a million times. But let's not just blame it on the sheriffs, because I went past that. I went to the DA, and my next step was my congressman, and I was on my way up to the mayor's office. Had I not have to stop at Ditto's and make a million copies in case this congressman that I'm about to meet, Dennis Cardoza, is a crooked son of a gun, and I have to go over and see George Randazza. Okay, that's how many copies you got to make to get anywhere. And if I have to go to the damn attorney general, I will. But everybody in Stanislaus County better start doing their jobs. And I'm not no 5150. My name is Tracy Navon Holcomb, and I'm a pissed off citizen.
Well, is April Primo available? Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I'm here for the Tea Party, and I want to talk about one of our core values, and that's fiscal responsibility. I've been coming to the meetings. I think I spoke at the last meeting. I'll probably be doing a lot more speaking. And last time you talked about some budget items. One of them was hiring a librarian, and the other one was buying equipment for AB 32. And I had some questions about that. And so I'm going to give you the questions around that. And I'm going to ask you some questions. The hiring the librarian, I had some questions.
Excuse me, April, I need you to know that you can ask all the questions you want to in the 5 minutes, but we won't respond.
Okay,
this is fine. This is not an agenda item.
That's okay. Okay. That's right. The ratio of volunteers to the hired staff is the librarian, and could we have made that a volunteer position? As far as the equipment, the 900,000 of AB 32, if 23 passes, which says, stops AB 32 until we reach 5.5 unemployment rate. What happens to that $900,000? The real question here, and I don't know if you're going to answer it or not, is I'm trying to figure out where do we intersect the budget? Where does the Tea Party, where does the taxpayer intercept the budget so that we will be able to figure out and ask the questions in advance. And the other thing is when they ask you, like the staff asks, are there any questions, are they referring to only questions that you have, or is it questions from the audience also? If I'm going to be here every week, I kind of need to know how this thing functions, and I'm asking some questions about it.
Okay. The recommendation is if you have particular questions of a department, contact that department head prior to the meeting.
Are they going to be able to give me the budget line item so that...
I'm sure they could if you would ask the specific question or the CEO's office.
Okay.
Okay, and all those numbers are in the phone book under Stanislaus County Government.
Okay, thank you.
During one of our meetings on an agenda item, every time that I've been involved, there's a question first of... Does anybody on the board have a question of staff after the presentation? Then we always give an opportunity for anybody from the audience to follow up with a question or clarification if they'd like to.
Okay.
So there's always an opportunity for the public to have input on any item. Rick, did you want to add something?
Yes, just to answer your specific question about contact persons, each Friday prior to subsequent Tuesday board meeting, the clerk of the board post the agenda and the agenda items that are part of the agenda packet. In that posted agenda and accompanying item, you'll see a contact person for each item that's going to be considered by the Board of Supervisors. So you can go to that item, identify who the contact person is, and it'll give you an individual to contact directly.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Robert Stanford, following Robert will be Tammy Hall.
Good evening. Well, as you can see, there's another entourage of IHSS persons. A lot of people in the community have been talking a lot about this, and I've been thinking a lot about it. I've, you know, really tried to explain to people that, you know, in some respect, there's really is only so much that you can do. But there is things that you can do. I think that all of you remember the when I was going, back and forth over that needle giveaway in the park. And it really meant a lot to me when Vito came out. It wasn't even in his district. He came out and he sat with me, and it was kind of like together we, found the resolution that we needed to find there. But I didn't feel like, thanks to Vito, I just at that moment no longer did I feel like I was being put off, that sort of thing. And then at some candidate workshops I've gone to, I've seen people get up and talk about you, Mr. O'Brien, how people outside of your district, you'd call them in the middle of the night and, just do these little special things. I'm really kind of under the belief and the understanding that you got to do what you got to do. Nobody gave you alternatives for any reformation of the program. They only gave you complaints. And you couldn't let it go without renewing the program. I can see that. We do have fraud, but the main message being that we don't like the way it's being done. And I keep trying to tell people, I really don't think that you're going to be able, or would even, tell the powers that be in this situation how to do their job. But failing that, perhaps there is something you can do to give assurances that you will look further into it at least, or maybe go out and meet some of these people that we're hearing from, like an 83-year-old lady that was raided, had her underwear drawer searched, and when she asked about who she would make a complaint to, they just had to tell her right away, if you make a false complaint, that's a felony. But it's somebody, we'll get back to you with who that is. Then this is pretty much the information she got back, that sort of thing. There's something that you can do to be like Vito was for me that day. Hero of the day, hero of my situation, reinstilling my faith in the Board of Supervisors. That day, hi Robert, how you doing? He comes out, he's wearing shorts. I'm not expecting you to do anything radical or anything, but one of you, probably Vito, can reach out and be a hero here and say, let's find out what's really going on. Something. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Tammy Hall and then Astrid Zuniga.
Hello, my name's Tammy Hall, and this is my first meeting, so I'm not real knowledgeable and get kind of embarrassed and stuff. But anyways, I have a daughter that was born with disabilities. She never slept. She never ate. And when she did, everybody else wore it. She needs care 24 hours a day, and I get no rest. She needs me in this program. If they lower the wages, we're barely scraping two nickels together now. Life is rough, but we're making the best we can. We go to parks. We do fun things like that. And for the government to take, and this drives me nuts as I drive out to the IHSS building often, they can take and repave all these roads, but what are they going to do when all these people, are they repaving them so that everybody can sleep on the street? Because where are the kids, the grown-ups, where are they all going to go? There's not going to be any placement. I live off of Rumble in between Tully and Davis, or Tully and Carver, and there's people that are selling everything that they own. They can't afford to live anywhere, and it's coming down to the point where we're going to have to start cutting stuff off too. And, it's like television for my daughter is the only thing that'll calm her down that she's interested in. She doesn't ask for a lot, just that. And I can't pay that anymore. So I just really hope that we can keep things keep the wages where they are. I don't know if you ever thought about your grandmother, if they were put in a foster home. My mom was a caregiver, and these people would privately pay my mom to go in and take care of their loved one. She did hospice, so that they could pass away at home. But like with your parents or grandparents, would you like to see them having to go through all this struggle just to, make some kind of a life? Anyways, that's about all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Astrid Zuniga, and after Astrid, we'll hear from Cheryl Davidson.
Hello again. I'm here again today to remind you how important this program is, not only on a moral level, but on a fiscal level, and how can you propose an $8 wage to a program that saves the state money in the long run? I would like to see all of you live on $8 an hour instead of giving yourselves raises. And, I don't think you could do it. I really don't. You couldn't possibly live under those means, And if I'm not mistaken, the only actual cost to the county in the long run, maybe not this year or next year, but down the road, is the administrative cost, because the federal government reimburses you. So all we ask is that you at least maintain, what it really costs you in the long run. But whatever happens. If the cuts happen and we end up making $8 an hour, that's fine, because I guarantee it will still end up costing you guys more in the long run, because most of those people are going to start asking for cash aid, food stamps. I know I'll probably have to, because I know I'm not going to leave my son uncared for, or cared for by a complete stranger that doesn't understand what his needs are. He has no speech. I can't leave him with a stranger to care for him, and he would never be able to tell me if they were harming him in any way. And all I ask is that you guys at least try to maintain a program that fiscally has done you guys no harm. Thank you.
Cheryl Davidson, and following Cheryl will be Tammy Faria.
Good evening, Board of Supervisors. Again, here we are. I want you to know, as an IHS provider and an active union member, we will all continue to be here and present at every meeting until you guys understand the impact the county proposal to decrease the wages of the hardworking, committed providers in this IHS program will have on our community. Not only will the business owners in our community suffer and inevitably be faced to have to close their doors, but the employment rate will continue to soar. So in my opinion, this is not only defeating the goal to recover from our economic recession we are all facing, but statistically forcing the people in our community to depend even more on the county services that are provided, allowing them to be financially eligible for the services, which in turn will cost our county even more deficit. It would also require substantial funding to build and maintain more care centers to house the disabled and the elderly people and force them into confinement without the quality of life that God has intended for them to live. It is time to give the vulnerable citizens of our community the respect and the dignity that they deserve. And as I conclude, I have a statement for each and every one of you to really think about and take to heart. What will it take for your hearts to be softened? God forbid it would take the demise of your health or the health of your loved ones. Remember, God always has a way of convicting our hearts, and you will be judged in the end.
Tammy Faria. Following Tammy will be Mike Loza.
Hi, once again, I'm here, Tammy Ferreira. I am a sister of a developmentally disabled brother. Lost mom a few years ago. You know what? I wasn't going to place my brother, and I was going to keep him at home with me. I could make a choice right now to go out, like I told you last time. I could get a better paying job. But you know what? I'm not going to put my brother out there. I'm not going to put him in a care home. I'm not going to have him be abused like he was in the past. My brother cannot receive the love, care, and respect that he receives in the home. My brother is loved. He is respected. And yes, he's spoiled. You know, we don't make it on a lot of money. We do it because we truly love him. I am an IHS provider. I make very little money to give the quality of care that I do. And now that you guys are talking about cutting our wages, we make $9.38 an hour, $8 an hour to cutting us back to $8 an hour. The only person that is going to affect is going to affect the people that we are serving. If our wages are cut, many of our providers are going to have no other choice but to place their loved ones back into care homes and convalescence. I don't know how many of you guys have actually personally been into the care homes or actually in the state hospitals. As a child, I worked in the state hospitals. I seen the abuse and neglect that went on. I was the part of closure of a state hospital. My brother won't go there. I will work a second job. I'll do whatever I got to do to take care of him. In many cases, our disabled and elderly are not going to receive the love, care, and respect that they receive in our homes. I'll take care of my brother 7 days a week. I do. I do need a break once in a while. I need respite. I don't know if you guys are aware of this out there. If I go to look for respite for the weekend for my brother, once a month I may get respite. Beds aren't available. What are we going to do with our disabled and our elderly when we have to place them in convalescent and care homes and the homes aren't out there? What are we going to do? Put them on the street like we did many years ago when we closed the state hospitals and put the mentally ill out on the streets? That's why we have the problems that we do. Once in a while, and, you know, I want to say, you know, it's always the elderly and the handicapped that we pick on. I'm here today because they can't speak for themselves, so I will speak for them. They need you guys to have some compassion in your heart to understand that we're not doing this for the money, that we truly love and care about the people that we're trying to take care of. Please do not cut the wages. Some of the best people I know are doing the work that I'm doing because they truly care about the people they're serving. Thank you.
Thank you. Mike Loza. And following Mike will be Tamir Lukman.
Mike Losa, good evening.
Hey.
I actually reside in Mr. Monteith, your district. And I come to you today with some petitions that we took to two different districts, targeted two different districts, and these are petitions of support for the IHSS program and for home care providers and the disabled and the seniors of our communities. And I want to read publicly what this petition was that we signed, that we had them sign. The In-Home Supportive System program is one of the most humane, cost-effective public program in Stanislaus County. Thanks to the IHSS, more than 4,500 elderly, blind, and disabled county citizens are able to live safely in their own homes and communities. Without this vulnerable program, with this valuable program, vulnerable too, huh? Without the valuable program, they would be forced to go to nursing homes or other institutions for care. Besides being less desirable than home care, nursing homes cost taxpayers at least five times more than home care. Furthermore, the more than 4,400 county home care providers bring important economic benefit to this county. They utilize local businesses for the basic needs and the needs of their clients, resulting in increased revenues for local businesses throughout the county. Another benefit is that the county share cost of the program is fully reimbursed by the state and local governments. The IHSS is a perfect example of a program that supports the goals of health, self-sufficiency, and independence, spelled out in the country and the Stanislaus County vision statement. Cuts in the IHSS program would hurt our county in many ways. They would take away revenue from local businesses. They are already struggling to recover from the economic recession. This would mean that many providers could no longer afford to continue in the program, forcing the people for whom they care for far more costly institutions. In other words, cutting IHSS would mean penny wise and pound foolish. Therefore, we the undersigned urge Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors to help maintain the quality of life for many of the most vulnerable citizens and those who care for them by continuing to support the IHSS program. Once again, this is a community concern. No one is trying to turn this into a union concern. It's a community concern that affects the most vulnerable people in the community. Our goal is 8,000 signatures. We are well on our way with over 2,000, and I will present them. And we also went to communities, to businesses, and we asked businesses to also sign up in support of this program, understanding the financial impact that failure to supporting this program, what it would cause to them. And I won't read what this one says, only because I think that everyone has spoken, or those that have spoken the right word as to the effect to these businesses, what it would cost. We're looking at, I think across the bargaining table, they stated close to $8 million, $8 million less a year into this community. The impact that that would have is devastating. And I also present these for your consideration as well. And I would like to finish by saying that I think, Robert, I didn't catch your last name. I think his words are well spoken and make a lot of sense, that it's not a confrontation for us to be here and speaking on behalf of the people that we speak with. Sometimes because of who we are speaking for causes bitterness in us because we can't understand why we take the positions that we take. When our phones at our office are ringing off the wall by consumers who come with these stories, they're not fabricated stories.
Mr. Loza, we're past 5 minutes.
Yes. Yeah. But thank you very much. And we hope we have a consideration from what's been being said the last 3 weeks.
Thank you. Tamir Lukeman.
Chairman, board members. We had scheduled some more speakers for you tonight. It had to do with the SIU, Special Investigative Unit, but they couldn't make it. I know some of you might feel good about that. But I want to draw an analogy. You as supervisors and the providers that work for the IHSS program, you as supervisors represent the community. Your task is basically the well-being of the community. And it's a large community, so you've been broken up into districts, so you can do that supposedly pretty comfortably. You have responsibilities to the community, and to be an elected official is an honor and a privilege. I'm not sure who your fraud unit is. The providers in the IHSS program, they take care of someone who can't take care of themselves in the privacy of their homes in most cases. Their task is the well-being of that recipient. In most cases, in all cases, some of your voters, or all your voters. We've already identified who their fraud unit is. The task that you perform, I look upon the same way the providers, and they perform their tasks. It's with compassion. You ran for the office because you like what you do. You want to represent. Can't be for the money. You want to speak and stand before and represent your members in your community, in your districts. The same way the providers take care of their people and stand and represent them with love and compassion. We fall into problems, though, when a provider's recipient can no longer be taken care of at home. And we talk about institutionalizing them. And we've heard how horrible that can be. And of course, there are good stories with institutionalizing people, but we hear about the horrible stories of institutionalizing someone. On your side, it's the budget deficit. How do we balance our books? There's no love and compassion when it comes to that money. It's all about that. And that's unfortunate. Because if we talk about balancing the books and we look around as who we're going to have to balance the books with or on, then we have to look at the ones who get the most and ask them to give the most. In some cultures, it's the business owners who support all of these businesses or all of these programs, the privileged ones. They support that in some cultures. It's the business owners who contribute so that you can have programs like IHSS. You're faced with many cuts, and you've dealt with most of them pretty well, I guess. I'm sure there's some people who are looking to the future for all of this to turn around. Some of the other agencies that you've had to go to for 1%, 2%, 5% cuts. And I'm unsure whether I see compassion when you come to the providers and the recipients of the IHSS program. I'm not sure I see or feel the same compassion that the providers extend when they're taking care of these people that you should or you have when you ran for this office. Maybe you've become calloused since you've been in office for 1, 2, and 3 years. Maybe you've forgotten. We all forget. That's why we're all here, to tell you, to remind you, to shake you. You must have that compassion. You must know. You mustn't forget who you are, that you're one of those citizens in your neighborhood, the man next door across the street. And yes, tomorrow you could be a provider or a recipient. We don't want you to institutionalize the IHSS program.
Thank you. That concludes the request that we have to speak. Is there anyone else that cares to address the board on an item not on the agenda this evening? If you care to serve us, please come forward. Give us your name if you would, please.
Good evening, Mr. Grover, Chairman of the Board, members of the Board, Mr. Robinson and Mr. Doring. My name is David Avila, and I'm a member of the Stanislaus County Supervisors Citizens Committee. And as a citizen of the United States, I'm excited about what the Founding Fathers established for us. The powers of the local government is directly linked to the United States government or Constitution, which is the supreme law of the land, which is also one of the opening statements in the Constitution of the State of California. The county has the most powerful government agents, that being elected officials. The county sheriff is the most powerful law enforcement agent in the country. He can overpower the FBI, BATF, and anyone else. You have the tax collector that has the power to collect taxes and hold them, I might mention. And then naturally, you as the Board of Supervisors are the governing agencies or agents. We as citizens have the power to check government. And when I say we as citizens, it's all of us. And we can do that, and as city council will tell you, that the power of nullification can be used to check laws that are unjust or considered as unjust. And our goal is to work with the county officials to take back the powers granted to us by the U.S. Constitution. And that is our goal and as my personal goal, and I'm looking forward to working with and meeting each and every one of you personally, and carrying out a relationship forever until we can get this thing turned back and to what our founding fathers established. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else?
I'm here for the Tea Party, but I hope you remember last time I stood up and said, I'm handicapped, I've got disabilities, mental disabilities. I was really surprised that this gentleman was talking about an institutionalization of people if you can't pay a wage. I want to give you an example of two people that I knew in my own lifetime. When I was young, when you were mentally disabled, they sent you to Napa State Hospital. You had one of those here in Modesto, and you were institutionalized. I had a little girlfriend who was born wrong. She couldn't speak, and they sent her to Napa State Hospital. We would go visit her. I was only 8 years old. We would go visit her, and she would scream and cry and beg her mother, please bring me home, bring me home. She never did learn to talk. She never did learn to walk. She, at this day, is in a wheelchair. Her sister has her at this point. We kind of quit the institutionalization thing. Mr. DeMartini knows. There's another little girl. She's 14 years old this year. She was born with a half a brain. Her mother was on drugs. Her brain was damaged. She has a hand like this, and she limps along. But she stayed in her home. The child started out in special ed. She's now attending high school. She talks. She walks. She had the special care because she was at home with her parents. I truly believe this second child that wasn't institutionalized will actually graduate from high school and maybe college and be a productive member of society. After all, the Americans with Disabilities Act is about independent living and giving us the ability to go out and actually produce like average citizens. I have been for that for a long time because I do have a college degree. It took me a long time, and I am handicapped. I was a general contractor. With a little help from the parents that take care of these children who are going to give them the best possible care, you might be down the road not taking care of somebody in a wheelchair with special needs, but actually a productive individual out in the community earning a wage and paying taxes.
Thank you. Any other comments this evening?
I got one.
Okay. This is the right time for it.
I'm Eva Garcia. I'm a caregiver.
Can you hold up just till you get to the microphone so we can record it? Ms. Garcia.
I'm handicapped too.
Okay.
But I'm a caregiver. I work for.
And your name was Eva Garcia?
Eva Garcia.
Okay. Thank you.
I've been in this business for about 30 years, off and on. And I've seen people tell me, if I'm handicapped, why am I a caregiver? The exact reason I am a caregiver is because I care for people. And I've survived a stroke and coma, and I still work. And lowering down the minimum wage, it's kind of hard on me too. Because I work. I'm handicapped. I still work. And I still take care of people. Worse than I am. And I don't see the reason why you should lower down the minimum wage. There's all kind of people working for handicapped people. I'm handicapped, and I work for them. And I applaud every one of you guys here. I'm proud to be a caregiver. So I don't see it right to lower down our wages. Because we do more for them sometimes than the own families do. And I'm sorry if I'm getting kind of heartfelt. But I don't think you should lower down the wage. Because we do a lot for people. Okay. And the elderly, it's not their fault that the economy is going downhill. They need the help. And we need to stay at our wages or maybe higher. I do private care too, and I get paid $10 an hour. And sometimes I'm just sitting there being a companion for them. Sometimes they just need somebody to talk to, somebody to say they care. So that's my point of view. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. Looks like that concludes our public comment period. Did you Did you want to speak? Yeah. just pull that down to below your chin, and it works a little bit better. Just there you go.
Okay, my name is Pernilla Henry.
Okay.
And I have a husband. He's disabled. He had an aneurysm, and he had a stroke all at one time. And I take care of him. I'm the one have to take care of him. And I got on ISS program, and they cut my check already. I don't get a check at the end of the month. I only get one check per month. The first, I get a check for about $600. The last of the month, I get nothing. My husband cannot work, and I have to take care of him. You can look at my arm and tell right here that I have to have a surgery myself because of this. I have to pick him up. I have to turn him over. I have to also put underclothes on him. I have to give him a bath. Just me in the house by myself. My husband is 5'11", and I'm 4'11". But I have to take care of him, and I'm going to continue all of my life to take care of him. But I think it's very wrong that I have to pay the share costs that I pay. They takes the whole check of the last month, so I get nothing. That means that I have to either go and ask my relatives or some friends to help me with some bread and milk for us to continue for the next month. They don't give me no supplies for his what he needs. He needs supplies for his care. They stopped giving me that. So now I have to either buy it or try to make out the best way I can to get him some supplies for his undergarment. And I know all of you guys are sitting up there do not experience anything like that with your husband or your wife and don't have no kind of sympathy for people that do. And I'm one that do have to do that. You can come to my home anytime you want to, and that's where I am. I can't even go to the store, not unless I got somebody to take care of him. I don't leave him alone. He's not. He can't, because if I leave him alone and somebody knock on the door, he can't even open the door. He can't answer the phone. He can't get to the phone. So how much more do they have to cut down on a check when a person can't get anything? I'm not getting anything. I'm getting $600 a month because they're taking my other ones on the share of costs. So I just got to stop talking.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else care to speak during public comment? I might suggest if there's someone else that's going to want to follow this lady, go ahead and get up and come on down. Just give us your name, please.
Cheryl Bianchi.
Thank you.
I'm a home care provider. I used to take care of my daughter until last year. She was in the hospital, and she choked to death on a mucus plug because they weren't watching her. And I was there at home with her 24/7, taking care of her. And when I left her in their hands, she wasn't getting the care. And they said, go ahead and go home. Get some sleep. So I did. I got a call. Your daughter's coach. Would you like to come? So I did. I didn't make it. I didn't get to say goodbye to my daughter because they told me to go home.
I was only off work for a month and I had to go back to work. My income went down. I lost my home, car, creditors calling me. I didn't get the time to grieve. And now I take care of an elderly lady, which I adore. She's a very sweet woman, and she's legally blind. And she could not take care of herself without me being there. And I just want you to realize that we cannot live on $8 an hour. I had to move to an apartment because I couldn't have my home anymore. So please think very serious about this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Christine, do you have a hand microphone?
Can you hear me?
Sure.
You know? Yeah. I had no idea what was going on today. My daughter actually works for In-Home Supportive Services. I don't receive services. I have a sister that has cerebral palsy. And I guess I consider myself fortunate. I wasn't born with a disability. When I was 8 years old, I ended up getting rheumatoid arthritis. Just, you know, happened. No one knows why. It's not inherited in my family. It just happened. And I consider myself blessed. And what I'm hearing today, I'm very blessed. I'm glad I'm not having to deal with this stuff. I think it's crazy. People can't get bare necessities to exist. What would happen if years ago Albert Einstein didn't get help? You know, we all thought he was crazy. You know, by not giving people support, we might be stopping another Albert Einstein from becoming his full potential. What about President Roosevelt? He was handicapped. If he didn't get help, where would we be? People are just asking for common sense help. They're not asking you to pay, you know, $20, which is what these people deserve for the work they do. I don't think any of you would even consider doing it for the $8 an hour, let alone less than that. I said that wrong. It'd be the $9 that they're getting now. Excuse me. But it's common courtesy and common respect. Each and every one of you could be affected by something that can happen. I mean, it can be an automobile accident. It can be a disease like happened with me. It could be one of your family members. And the odds are it'll happen to each and every one of you at some point. You should be thankful you guys have enough money. But what happens when it all gets drained? All your money goes for paying the bills, the bare necessities. In time, that happens to almost anybody with a type of a long-term disease and a disability. You need to think about the people you're supposed to be supporting and helping. And when you make your choices, really think about all that.
Ma'am, could you share your name with us, please?
Debbie Johnson.
Thank you, Debbie.
My name is Loretta Cart, and yes, I happen to be one of your craziest ones up here. Because I happen to have a disability myself, and every one of you know it. How many times have I been down? I'm proud of these guys that get in and work for us. Everyone I've had so far as I know, has done a theft at my home. Have I ever gotten help? No. Police even laugh about it. And by gollies, we need these people now, because I understand they go through training before they're allowed to work for us. And if they have to go through training and by gollies know what they're doing, maybe we've got good people. And look at how many we've got out on the street, if nothing else, who won't work unless they get at least $10 or $12 an hour. And by gollies, these people here will at least come in and help some of us. For Pete's sakes, quit trying to lower their pay.
Anyone else? Okay, well, that concludes our public comment period this evening. We will go to the consent calendar, which are all the items listed on the agenda that have an asterisk beside them, and we will, with one motion and vote, enact those. based on the staff recommendation. So chair will entertain a motion.
We'll move.
Yep.
Second.
We have a motion from Supervisor Monteith and second from Supervisor O'Brien. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Our first scheduled matter of the evening is under the 6:35 scheduled matter, a public hearing to consider the adoption of the fiscal year 2009-2010 consolidated annual performance evaluation report for the community development block grant and emergency shelter grant programs. And this evening we'll have Director Kirk Ford and Juan Gonzalez.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman. Excuse me, members of the board. Every once in a while, I'm able to bring you something other than a potentially controversial land use issue or project. This evening is actually one of those times. Each year, our department quietly goes about the business of administering our community development block grant programs and other related federal and state-funded programs. Together with our city partners, we develop a consolidated action plan and fund a variety of very, very beneficial projects and programs throughout our county. Each year we're required to report out what we've done and what our programs have accomplished, and that's why we're here tonight. But before I hand this over, I'd really like to acknowledge our community development manager, Aaron Farnan, and his support staff, Roxanne Hubbs, Miguel Diaz, Kristen Dowd, and Juan Gonzalez. Our community development division truly touches a lot of people's lives, and I'm very, very proud of what they do. So here to give you a summary of a few of the accomplishments of our program is Juan Gonzalez.
Good evening, Chairman Grover, members of the board, Mr. Doring, Mr. Robinson. Tonight before you, we have the Consolidated Annual Performance Evaluation Report for the fiscal year 2009-2010 Community Development Block Grant Program. San Jose County and the cities of Ceres, Newman, Oakdale, Patterson, and Waterford formed the CDBG Consortium, which received entitlement funds from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. CDBG funds must either benefit low and moderate income people, prevent or eliminate slum and blight conditions in low income neighborhoods, or address an urgent need in the community. The Consolidated Annual Performance Evaluation Report provides a summary of the accomplishments over the past fiscal year and also gives a 15-day public review period where members of the public are allowed to provide input or comments on the activities carried out. In 2009-10, about $2.5 million came to the county or the consortium in CDBG funding and about $110,000 in ESG, which is emergency shelter grant funds. This is a breakdown of the CDBG allocation amongst the consortium members and programs. The consortium sets aside each year about 10% of its allocation for public service programs in which they give the nonprofits an opportunity to apply for grants of up to $20,000 to provide essential public services. This past fiscal year, over 55,000 individuals were served through these services. An example is the Senior Meals Program, which serves seniors over 60 years and older with meals five days a week at congregate sites or homebound. A total of 719 seniors were served through this program in the past fiscal year. Another example of a public service program is the Patterson Family Resource Center, and which provided case management services to residents in the West Side. This program assisted about 222 individuals this past fiscal year. As a CDBG recipient, Stanislaus County is obligated to provide a fair housing program to prevent or address housing discrimination in the county. In fiscal year, the county partnered with Project Sentinel to provide these services and provided referrals, fair housing investigations, and landlord-tenant mediation and resolution throughout the county. Another CDBG-funded program is the Targeted Technology Training, which provides computer literacy training to low-income individuals throughout the county or in unincorporated areas of the county. 780 individuals were served this past fiscal year. A significant portion of our CDBG funding each year goes to infrastructure improvement projects. The county's current project is the Empire Storm Drain Project, and conducted construction of the Phase 1A in the Empire community. And the consortium cities usually carry out similar infrastructure improvement projects in low-income neighborhoods. The consortium also receives emergency shelter grant funds, which are designed to provide services or provide funding to homeless service providers, which in turn serve the homeless. Approximately 550 homeless individuals were served this past fiscal year with funding received, which was about $109,000. One of the agencies funded through ESG funds was Community Housing and Shelter Services, which provided homeless prevention rental assistance. About 120 individuals were served through this program. In 2009, HUD made available a series of new programs through Economic Recovery Acts. One of these was the Neighborhood Stabilization Program, which made funds available to localities for the purchase of foreclosed housing units, make necessary improvements, and then turn them around to low-income or first-time homebuyers. Throughout the consortium, 65 foreclosed properties were acquired, and 46 of those were rehabilitated. 15 first-time homebuyers throughout the county were able to be assisted with down payment assistance to purchase these homes. Another Recovery Act program was the Homeless Prevention and Rapid Rehousing Program, which provided assistance with housing relocation and stabilization services to people in danger or of becoming homeless or homeless families. And lastly, the CDBG-R program was assigned to install solar systems in NSP units and also energy efficiency improvements in these homes. About 17 units were identified for solar system installations this past fiscal year, and this program has a variety of benefits. It also created training for 20 local displaced workers, and when these improvements are made in these homes, these improvements will help households reduce their energy costs and foster energy independence. That concludes our presentation. Staff recommends that the board close the public review period for the fiscal year 2009-2010 Consolidated Annual Performance Evaluation Report and conduct a public hearing, and also adopt the 2009-2010 CAPR and authorize staff to incorporate comments received prior to the close of the public comment period and during the public hearing in the final CAPR to be submitted to HUD. Any questions? Address them.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the board for staff? Go ahead.
On the public service programs, is that competitive bid process? Is that how it?
Yes, it's a competitive process, and which a representative from each of the five consortium member cities sits in. Also, a member from the chief executive office sits in the panel.
And do you guys look at regional proximity to the programs?
We do.
Yeah.
In the application, we ask what the proposed program will, what area they'll serve. So they take that into consideration. Thank
you. Okay. We're going to open the public hearing and give an opportunity for anybody in the audience to make comment regarding this program presentation. Public hearing is now open. Okay, seeing no one come forward, we're going to close the public hearing and give opportunity for anyone on the board to comment or make a motion regarding the staff recommendations.
There's no further comment. I'll move approval of the two staff recommendations.
Second that.
Okay, we have a motion from Supervisor Kazin, a second from Supervisor DeMartini for approval of the two staff recommendations. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 5-0.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our second hearing this evening will be a public hearing to approve the Stanislaus County District Attorney and Stanislaus County Sheriff's Department expenditure plans for the State Supplemental Law Enforcement Services Fund. And making the presentation this evening will be Dan Wirtz.
Good evening, Chairman Grover, members of the board, Mr. Robinson, and Mr. Doring. Dan Wirtz, I'm the business manager with the Sheriff's Department, and I'll be conducting the public hearing for the approval of the District Attorney and Sheriff's Department expenditure plan for 2010-2011 for the Supplemental Law Enforcement Services Funds. Government Code Section 30061 to 30065 establishes the authority for the Supplemental Law Enforcement Program, also known as the Citizens Option for Public Safety COPS program. Funding comes from the state's local safety and protection account, which comes from the vehicle license fees, and it provides at least $100,000 for each law enforcement jurisdiction. The funds from Supplemental Law Enforcement Services are to be expended exclusively to provide frontline law enforcement, county jail construction and operation, district attorney criminal prosecution. The funds are to supplement existing services, and funds shall not be used to supplant existing funding. The 2010-2011 expenditure plan calls for the district attorney to use $100,000 to partially fund a criminal investigator two and two legal clerk fours to assist in criminal investigation. The Sheriff's Department will use $100,000 to fund 0.82 of a sergeant custodial in detention, and $100,000 to fund 0.76 of a sergeant in operations. These appropriations and revenues have already been included in the 2010-11 proposed budget that your board has previously approved. At this point, we'd like to conduct, if you have any questions, I will be able to answer those, and then conduct the scheduled public hearing to receive comment and input for the Stanislaus County and District Attorney and Sheriff's Department 2010-11 fiscal year expenditure plan for the supplemental law enforcement funds.
Okay, so your proposal tonight is to conduct the public hearing and then also a request to approve your plan?
Yes, so the staff recommendations that we have are one and two, to conduct the public hearing and then approve the Stanislaus County District Attorney and Sheriff's 2010-11 fiscal year expenditure plans for the supplemental law enforcement services.
Okay, are there any questions for Dan? I see any from the board. We're going to open the public hearing and give opportunity for anybody from the public to comment or ask questions. Please come forward. Just state your name again, please, if you will.
David Avila. I have a quick question. I was just curious on the $100,000 for the two gentlemen in the prison. One was 0.8 and one was 0.7. Does that cover just payroll only, which means they're making more than $100,000 each?
Correct. Last fiscal, well, depending on how much money is allocated from the state through the vehicle license fees, there are certain percentages that allocate that money out, and then it's based on population to the cities. Depending on that allocation, the county and the city of Modesto could receive more than $100,000, and that would go to fund those positions. The cost of the two sergeant positions is over, with salaries and benefits, is over $100,000 for both of those positions.
Okay, thank you.
But to respond to your specific question, sir, the $100,000 is greater than the base salary. It does include a component of the benefits. The 0.76 and the two numbers that Mr. Wirtz shared with you were represented the percentages of the total salaries and benefits associated with the two sergeant positions.
What would a portion of that be? Amortization from the cost of the supervisors and whatnot, or would that be his direct costs?
No, it would be the direct cost of his hourly rate plus retirement costs, health care costs, unemployment, workers' comp, those associated benefits that make up that position.
So it's direct costs, so there's not any indirect costs.
There are no indirect costs. Right.
Thank you.
Other public comments? Okay, thank you for that. We're going to close the public hearing and bring it back to the board for further comment or action.
Motion to approve staff recommendations.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion from Supervisor O'Brien, second from Supervisor Monteith for approval of the two staff recommendations. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Thank you. Let's consider correspondence, please.
This board has received a copy of the Fire Life Safety Inspection Report for the Stanislaus County Juvenile Hall.
Refer to the Department of Environmental Resources.
This board has received a copy of the Turlock Rural Fire Department Fiscal Year 2010-2011 budget.
Refer to the Auditor Controller.
This board has received from the Gallo Center for the Arts a copy of fiscal year ending June 30th, 2010 audited consolidated financial statements for the Central Valley Center for the Arts, Incorporated and subsidiaries.
Also refer this to the Auditor Controller.
This board has received from the State Water Resources Control Board a copy of an application for petition for temporary transfer of water from the Merced Irrigation District to four state water contractor agencies.
Refer this to the Department of Public Works, the Department of Planning and Community Development, the Department of Environmental Resources, and the Agriculture Commissioner and Sealer of Weights and Measures.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
We acknowledge receipt of the claims and refer them to the Chief Executive Office Risk Management Division. Are there any Board of Supervisor reports tonight? Okay, seeing none. Mr. Robinson, do you have a legislative, fiscal, and management report for us?
Yes, both the state legislature and the federal representatives are not doing very much in their respective jobs right now. I do have one issue that I wanted to quickly brief you on and let you know the direction that I am leaning relative to a request we received from the DMC Foundation, and speaks specifically to the closure of 323 adult daycare health centers on a statewide basis, including DMC's Foundation's Miller Place Adult Health Care Center and Turlock's Adult Day Health Center, which are both located in Stanislaus County. The DMC Foundation asked the county to take an active opposed position to these closures. This creates something of a quandary for the Board of Supervisors, and my recommendation to you is that you don't take a position on this. One of the strong statements that the County Board of Supervisors has made and continues to make is that the state of California is not effectively managing their resources, and we expect them to take steps necessary to adjust their budget to be in conformance with the resources available to it. This is one of the recommendations that are being made. However, the ultimate decision is one that the legislature and the governor will need to agree to. I would encourage, and with no objection, we'll send a letter to DMC Foundation encouraging them to take an opposed position and to do whatever they can within their own lobbying efforts to oppose the action. However, I think the Board of Supervisors, as a matter of public policy, should remain neutral relative to the decisions of the state of California that affect California on a statewide basis, and will have an effect on its ability to present to the residents of the state of California and Stanislaus County in particular a balanced budget. So if there are no objections or strong feelings to the contrary, it's my intent to thank the foundation for their request, to encourage them to pursue direct communication with the legislature and the governor on their desires, and to respectfully decline to take an official position on the Board of Supervisors. Okay, thank you, and that's all I have.
Okay, thank you. That concludes our agenda. This meeting is adjourned.